Aline Day McCusick, you've got, well, recently a new book out. And, well, here it is. You know, Electric Body, Electric Health. So how is it doing? Of course, I read it when it came out and I listened to it and I even have the Kindle version. So I'm liking it. How's it doing out there in the world?
Yeah, it's actually doing really well. It's selling consistently. It's got great reviews on Amazon for both the paper and the Audible. So yeah, people are, you know, getting the benefit that I wanted them to get from it. So I can't complain.
Yeah, I like that. I also like that you read it, the Audible version. There's something about when authors read their own books that just has a certain authenticity that just comes through, that doesn't when someone else reads it. I know that some people just they're just not good at it, so they don't read their own book, but it seems like I would feel funny letting somebody else read my book to everybody else. It just seems so personal.
Yeah, it's true, but not everybody has the skills, you know, to both be a writer and a speaker and all that. So I have the good fortune of having done a lot of speaking and a lot of interviews and teaching and things like that. So I'm comfortable with what comes out of my mouth.
Yeah. So, well, okay, here's a good icebreaker. Well, I'm just thinking we'll just catch up to the new book, ask you some questions about stuff, and maybe we could look at the store. I'll share a screen and we could look at some of the new, you've got new forks out, which are really exciting. And the holidays are coming up, people. So following updrafts, you know, it's one of the things that you mentioned in a few of your lectures, and such as following the updrafts, basically kind of maybe following your bliss, going where the day takes you, not letting things be so overly important and heavy. And I'm finding that, well, of course, following updrafts is a great idea, great concept, but it's amazing how many people are sort of mired in, let's say, past trauma, guilt, or they're shooting upon themselves. Do you find that as... Do you think that's really a big challenge for people? Because I'm finding that just simply following your updrafts, going where the day takes you, taking it easy, following your bliss, that alone is quite a challenging concept for a lot of people.
Well, I think it's still important to understand that it's not some kind of 24/7 aspiration, right? I think people tend to think erroneously in all or nothing. And, you know, it's about catching it where you can. And not feeling guilty about it, not expecting yourself to live that way. You know, it's just adding more things to feel guilty about. I'm like, oh, I should be following my updrafts. Like, that is completely the wrong attitude. You know, about catching the Oz where you can. Because, listen, some people are really in life situations where they don't have that freedom. And I've been there myself. You know, there was one point where I was taking care of an infant son, my dying father, two businesses and trying to be a wife at the same time. And there was not a lot of room for Oz, right? And there was a lot of guilt-driven obligation and duty. And, you know, I wasn't in a position. But, you know, could I sit and really enjoy a cup of coffee during that time? You know, could I go outside and breathe the air and listen to the birds or make sure I catch the sunset, right? So following updrafts with these Oz might have to be tiny little things in a really difficult day, you know? But life and life's pleasures and our experience of life really is made up of all the little tiny things. And I think people get very caught up in thinking that, you know, that it's some big thing. But even people who are doing big things are still getting their pleasure, their updrafts from small and simple pleasures. I mean, that's just the way life is. And I think we have a really big subconscious issue with pleasure in our culture because, you know, again, going into this all or nothing way of looking at things, that if you take pleasure to an extreme in anything, it becomes pain and poison, right? So, but just the right amounts of pleasure in the right ways without guilt, it's what we need. Like that feeds us, right? Life evolved moving away from pain and towards pleasure. Like we are built as human beings for pleasure, right? Our eyes to take in beauty, our nose to smell the roses, our mouth to taste the chocolate, right? I mean, never mind all the rest of us. And so that's what feeds us. We nourish ourselves on things that are beautiful and delicious and, you know, and that's all around us in nature. Well, we can catch updrafts in all kinds of small ways. So it's important to recognize that and to grant yourself the space and the permission that some of your life is going to be and difficult, you know, okay. Life comfort and discomfort, life is pain and pleasure. And this sort of new age notion that we have to make it 100%, you know, I have to aspire to Christ being Buddhahood, you know, is very damaging to people because it makes them reject their own very normal, natural human experience.
Yeah. And I find that people who, when you mentioned the new agey concept of it, people who say, I don't do negativity, I'm only positive. Yeah. I find that people who force themselves to have positive emotion constantly, well, for one thing, they can't, but they actually burn themselves out faster and worse than negative people. Yeah. There's something odd about that.
Yeah, it's going to be real. You know, here's a place where switching language can be useful. Instead of being positive and negative, we can be constructive or destructive. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a very different thing, because sometimes you have to bring constructivity into a difficult situation constructively, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's not necessarily having to be positive, but it is being constructive. And then we can just be randomly destructive with, you know, and that's okay, because sometimes, you know, that's where we're at. But this up, down, high, low thing that people are stuck in, I just think is really damaging. You know, all the world's a circle, and we're either expanded or we're contracted. I think that's a much better way of looking at it.
Yeah, and looking for the updrafts. I've watched people paraglide, you know, quite a lot, and they go up on the big hill and they jump off and they catch the updrafts. And it's funny, somebody who's kind of a master at it, they just catch updrafts all day long, and it's smooth and it looks nice. People who try too hard are kind of scary to watch. I'm like, oh, you know, I hope you're going to be okay. You know, trying too hard doesn't always work so well, you know. So, well, also, when it comes to trying to be positive all the time, in your work, you do mention being emotionally honest, like experiencing our emotions, letting them flow through us. And I think that for me, I tend to find that I just see everything, whether it's a positive, well, let's say a negative emotion, constructive or deconstructive, I just have this habit now that's built in of saying, this is good. This is working out. This is going to be good. Like if my car breaks down, I go, this is great. You know, like no matter, and I do, I go, cause you know, this is good. And so no matter what happens, and this can be challenging, but it can become a habit where you, no matter what happens, if it might have that tinge of negativity, you just go, this is going to work out for my good. This is good right now. Maybe it doesn't look like it, but it's good. And I almost then, when disaster strikes, I have this sense of humor about it. And even though maybe there's a little bit of negative emotion, I'm sort of laughing. I'm kind of giggling, yeah. Going, I know this is a good thing, because that's all that happens. Everything works out for my good. Everything always works out for me. And then I can experience whatever emotion
everything
comes.
Everything always works out. You know, here we are. Yeah. I mean, we've been through all kinds of stuff, difficult stuff. Here we are, you know, even when things seem like they're not going to work out or seem like they're bad. Very often they're not. They're a change that needs to happen. It might be difficult. It might be uncomfortable. Sometimes it's about timing, you know, because we're all threads in the universal tapestry and everything has to line up in the bigger picture. And so, yeah, being able to kind of get into the center of your flow and just kind of go along with life and, you know, stuff comes up and you just sort of flow around it and with it. And, you know, that's that easygoing kind of thing. And unfortunately, a lot of us end up getting, you know, triggered and stuck and freaking out about stuff. And what I've observed is that a lot of those kinds of reactions are really just tempest in a teapot and seriously a waste of energy, you know, because they're not necessary, because it will work out. It will pass. And like you said, having a sense of humor and a sense of lightness with things that are difficult or hard or unexpected makes dealing with them so much easier than banging your head against a wall.
Oh, definitely. And that sense of humor is very helpful, because I always say, I always win. Like no matter what happens, if I can't get something to work, I'm like, I always win. So you might as well just give up. I will persevere. You know, I always win. So then you just start to have this kind of, you start sparring with the universe and you enjoy the, sometimes following our bliss is a bit of struggle, but you keep after it. Yeah.
I mean, the notion that following your bliss is some kind of like row your boat narrowly downstream is ridiculous. I mean, I've been rolling a boulder up a hill for decades now. I'm following my bliss, but it's been really challenging on so many levels, you know, and the only way that I would have made it this far, you know, kind of pushing a new paradigm and a new way of looking at things into a world that's very set in its ways, has been through tuning. You know, I've gotten a lot of tuning and finding that when our electrical systems are groomed, you know, when we don't have snags and loose wires and crossed wires and ungrounded wires and, you know, when our circuitry is smooth and flowing correctly, life may be difficult, but you're strong and centered enough and resilient enough to meet the challenge of it. And that's really what it's about. You know, we can't expect life to be easy. It's not easy. And honestly, difficulty makes us grow. You know, if we all just had easy lives, we'd be boring for one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we wouldn't like difficulty. I know for me, like losing both my parents, taking care of both of my parents and they're dying, really created a whole bunch of patience and compassion and growth in my character. Did it hurt to go through? Yeah, so much. You know, but am I a better person because I've had that experience? Am I more empathetic? Am I more present? Yeah, absolutely. So embrace difficulty. Stop thinking you want updrafts and bliss. That's not what happens. It's like, you know, after enlightenment, the laundry. Like it's pretty, you know, it's just the way it is.
No, I definitely understand. Well, you know, you mentioned that in your book that negativity is basically leaking light. And that really spoke to me because, and you also mentioned the inner lightning bolt that we have and cultivating that, because we all have our practices. Most people, they want to be healthy. And I think many people out there have probably followed a lot of kind of diets that were probably a little silly, kind of created by zealots, sort of, you know, who had an ideology. And so there really seems like there's nothing more important than that inner lightning bolt. So can you comment on like, well, what is a person's inner lightning bolt and how does cultivating that will make life rock basically?
Well, we've been conditioned to think of ourselves and life chemically and mechanically, right? So that's the way we look at life. So if something in us goes south, you know, chemical imbalance, we need a chemical or we need surgery. I've learned the tuning forks have taught me to see that our body has an electrical system in its entirety that we don't learn about, that we're not taught about, that's not described. Okay. We have electric current running through us. That is the life force. We are alive because electricity is continually flowing through us, going to every cell. You know, my laptop would not be working if it did not have juice, right? My body is the same way. It's got to have electric juice in order to run. Anything that has an electrical current running through it has a magnetic field around it. That's a basic law of science. So when the esoteric traditions talk about things like the human energy field or the aura, that's the same thing that science is describing with the term biofield. It's our body's electrical system in its entirety. And you cannot separate the magnetic field from the electric current that runs through it. It's one and the same. Okay. So if this is the primary aspect of us, if when we're alive, our light is on and, you know, we're functioning and we die, the body's still there, the light went out. Okay. So your light body, and I would say it's the same thing that we call our soul, your body's electrical system, is more you than any other part of you. And so when you start to understand your electrical system and you start to take care of it, which is what the process of biofield tuning does, basically, we use tuning forks like sonar to bounce off the electromagnetic system and find areas of noise and resistance in the signal. Mm-hmm. When we find those areas, we just stay in them and we reflect that dissonance back to the body. And amazingly, the body is a self-tuning instrument. So the electrical system, when it perceives itself as out of tune, will use the steady input of a tuning fork to actually retune itself. And so we're like electric acoustic instruments, and we all get out of tune. Life makes us out of tune, you know, garbage in, garbage out. And we've all had a lot of garbage put in us, a lot of lies, a lot of falsehoods, a lot of stuff that made us not trust ourselves and our own body and our own human natural animal instincts. Mm-hmm. And so when, you know, and a lot of that signal jamming, TV, advertising, media has come in and really disconnected us from nature. You know, where do we get the electricity in our electric bodies? From the sun. we are powered by our environment. Okay. And when we are connected in a healthy, clear way to our environment, then we become healthy. And this is an electrical relationship. So I know that a lot of people put a lot of emphasis on food, and I get given a lot of pushback when I say what I'm about to say, because people who feel like food is the Holy Grail, like what I'm about to say is blasphemy. Okay.
Oh yeah.
All right. I don't really eat vegetables, and I never have since I was a kid. I've never liked vegetables. I just don't really eat them. And I work with what works with my body, what I've discovered my body likes and wants to eat. And that's fruit and meat, fruit and meat and bread. I love bread and cheese. Right? And so that's kind of what I live on. I also really consume a very small amount of calories, like very, very small amount of calories, because I've learned to live on sunlight, on breath, right? I'm not a breatharian, but I'm trending in that direction. So this idea that we need to eat mountains of vegetables in order, or like drink celery juice every morning, like I'll take a cappuccino over celery juice any day because I'm getting pleasure out of that. Like celery juice, I'm like, blech. Anything that you put in your mouth that you think is supposed to be good for you and your body's going, blech, it's not good for you. Like, don't eat it if you're like, oh, I have to eat this vegetable out of guilt and obligation because it's good for me. Baloney. You know, like I'm a living testament that you don't have to do that. That if you feed and groom and energize your electric body, that that's going to take care of keeping the juice running to every cell. You know, because we get most of our juice from our breath, right? Because you can go days, weeks, months without eating, right? I got a few friends on Facebook, they don't eat at all. So they're not coming from food, right? And those guys don't drink either. Like they are totally living off breath and sunlight. It is possible to do that. So if you can live off breath and sunlight, don't tell me that food is the most important thing. It isn't. Actually, your breath and your connection to nature are far, far more important.
Yeah. Doing Wim Hof breathing. I find that that's been really that's been a journey in itself. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but And that, when I first started, was such an emotional experience. I had to kind of do it on my hands and knees. I was like, and it was very difficult. And so one can be surprised if they start some kind of a breath practice, how emotional it might be. And how, like, honestly, if someone says, hey, that, you know, you got to bench press as much weight as you can 10 times. I'm like, sure. Compared to having to like do a session of Wim Hof, that's way easier.
Well, all of your emotions are on our breath.
Yes.
You know, they are. When you think about when you're sad and how that affects your breath, right? Especially when you're a kid, you're like, and so all of the emotion that started to come up that you stuffed down is in your breath. And so when you start breathing and you start opening up to all these parts of your body, you know, cancer is a disease that grows in the part of the body where there is no breath. And if you've got places where like, oh, I just don't go there, you know, well, neither does your breath. Neither does your consciousness. Neither does your aliveness. So all those emotions that you stuffed and that you buried and those grievances and boundaries that you didn't know how to hold and you got wounded and you tucked it away and your anger and you're tucking it all away and you're just not going there and you're trying to be fine and high vibe. Yeah, your body's like trying to get air.
Yeah, you're not fooling your body. No, you're not. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the Wim Hof sessions, those have been really intense, along with the tuning forks and many other types, many other things, but definitely I say that the working with the tuning fork, your tuning fork, and then also, yeah, Wim Hof breath have been huge openers for me, and it can be surprising. A person might not realize that so much is going to happen, and then it does, and it can be shocking because most of us, well, I'm sure you run into this all the time. You ask somebody how they are, and they go, "I'm fine." Well, you know that they're not. Oh, fine. Okay. Yeah. That's an alias for my life's a misery. Right. So,
yeah, actually, no, it's an acronym: fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
Yes. I'm fine. I got to remember that. Oh my gosh. What a good show title. No, but yeah. You know, yeah. Well, that's very true. And then the moment they actually do something, whether it's any kind of body work, whether it's the forks, whether it's Wim Hof breathing, they can be surprised at just the gush of emotion that comes forth that they did not realize. I know I was surprised, definitely. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's what's in the way of people's health. It's all the emotions you buried. I mean, more than anything, I've had my hands on people and in their fields and listening to their souls for 25 years now. And at the root of pretty much every disease, disorder, dysfunction, there's some kind of trapped emotion that we're not giving ourselves permission to really feel all the way and to digest and integrate. So, you know, there's a book called Feelings Buried Alive Never Die.
Never die.
And that's the truth. And like anything that's buried alive, they're like trying to let you know, that there's a waveform here that needs to be expressed. And it'll show up, you know, in different parts of the body. And that's been part of my research. It's like, if some part of your body, something goes wrong in some particular zone, I figured out like what the underlying emotion is in there. And it's called the biofield anatomy map. And, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, I have thousands of students now and people find this map to be really accurate. Like pretty much everybody I work with, their left shoulder hurts. They're sad. They're carrying around heavy, undigested sadness. And emotions, our electrical energy has mass. So when you generate a whole bunch of sadness and don't cry and don't mm-hmm. talk about it and don't express it, that weighs on the left shoulder and can create, and that emotional pain that we're not acknowledging becomes physical pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And could I ask about something specific as far as that? Something I see constantly. In fact, I think that, gosh, if you're over 50 and they haven't been replaced, you're not part of the club. It's hips and knees, and it can be the right hip or the left knee. But I see a society out there that is limping pretty much.
Yeah, and well, the right. Go ahead. The right hip is the really where everybody in our culture is imbalanced. Everybody's biofield, their electrical system, which should be centered in their body, becomes pitched to the right, especially in the hip area. And that's when we move out of the present moment into the future. And we engage in this sort of guilt-driven tasking, overdoing. I've got to do this and I've got to do that. And I've got to pay my taxes. I've got to send my kids to college and da, 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 da. And so when the electromagnetic field is not running through the physiology to the degree that it needs to, when it's all pitched off to the side, then the order, structure, and function of the physiology starts to break down. There's not sufficient electric juice in that zone to power all of the processes of regeneration that need to happen because it's in this imbalanced place. So, you know, and that ties in very often. So people need right hip replacements. They also often need prosthetics from the knee down on the left side. So we see more right hip replacements and more left leg prosthetics. And that's because the left foot relates to being stuck or mired in a toxic or uncomfortable situation. So if you grow up in an environment of abuse and toxicity, you don't have any way to get away from it, but you can withdraw your mind. Right? Mm-hmm. You can disassociate. And so people pull their awareness up out of that left foot, that left lower leg. And then they, you know, they just get busy or, you know, go ring around in circles or whatever. That's the withdrawal of the mind from discomfort. And then things start to go wrong. I mean, that was my left foot was really my biggest issue. That I grew up in a very difficult situation as a kid, and it was very uncomfortable. And there was nothing to do but like withdraw energetically from it. And then I ended up with all these problems in my left foot, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's, and in fact, when I first trained my first group of new students, my very first students back in 2010, I remember them working on me and listening to the field off my left foot. And it was the most horrible sound I'd ever heard. And they were like, oh my God, Eileen, how can you appear so functional and sound so terrible? And I was like, compartmentalization, you know, I'm good at it. We all become good at compartmentalization and like soldiering on. You know, so that's that whole left lower leg and right hip is like, I'm stuck in toxicity, but I'm soldiering on, you know, instead of fixing your energy. And that's what biofield tuning does. It comes in and it like pulls up all the stuff that's stuck and wrapped around that left foot and brings it back into circulation. You know, takes that right hip and brings it back into the moment. And when we bring ourselves fully into the present moment, you know, that's health, that's vitality, that's that mental, physical, emotional wellness that everybody wants.
Yeah. And then how about the left hip and the knees. I mean, what tends to hang out in those? Because that seems to be everybody's problem these days.
Hips and knees. Yeah. I mean, the left hip relates to things we want to be doing, being, or having, but we're not. Our knees, right? So whenever we're frustrated over our unmet needs, when we're unheard, when we feel powerless, what I call the posture of victimhood, you know, where we're all scrunched down in our left hip and we're feeling frustrated and disappointed and, you know, our needs aren't being met and nobody's hearing us. And that's when things pile up there. But also I find a lot of energy there with people who are kind of stuck in a kind of inner divide where like part of them might want to be like, oh, I want to get healthy and go to the gym and clean up my diet. And then another part is pulling them back to, you know, head first into the pint of ice cream or what have you, right? That inner divide where the conscious mind wants one thing and the subconscious body is just moving in its coping mechanism, right? So then I'll find that in the left hip. And the knees really relate to being stuck, just stuck, can't move forward. I'm stuck with the devil I know, and I'm being blocked going forward, right? So what has COVID done to people? It's really trapped people in a lot, you know, like, wow, I'm stuck in this house with these people. I, you know, whatever. It's created a lot of restriction of freedom. And so people haven't been able to move freely, right? So the knees relate a lot. Like if you watch a skier go, you know, there's a fluidity in the knees. Versus, you know, they go on the wrong side of the mob, they put you in cement from the knees down and throw you in a river. Many, many people are in cement from the knees down. In their minds, right? It's like emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. It is mental slavery unconsciously that people are bound in, that they're habituated to. And they may have infinite potential to create a different reality, but their circuits just keep rolling down the same path.
Wow. And that's pretty much the same meaning for either knee?
Yeah, the right knee is more about like, I want to move forward, but I'm being blocked. And my left knee is more like, I want to move away, but I'm attached to this habit or the, you know, the devil I know. I'm attached to this security, even though it's uncomfortable, it's familiar. Right. I'm attached to sugar. Like I want to let sugar go, but I keep on, you know, going back to it. So that's that sort of left knee issue. Whereas the right knee is like, I want to go do this, but I have to take care of my mother who had a stroke. I can't
make sense
because I'm stuck doing this.
And then when people get those replaced, which is pretty common, like those emotions buried alive, they still just continue existing in the metal hip or knee now. Is that usually the case? I mean, you can't really extract it physically.
No, you can't. No, just like cutting out a ruined joint doesn't take the emotions away because it's not in the physiology. It's in the electrical system. That's where all the information is stored. Because everything we see, everything we smell, taste, touch, feel, emotions are all electrical signals in the body. So it makes sense that our memory is stored in our electrical system.
No,
and
makes
that's
sense.
What I find. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to look at your new forks, but one thing I wanted to mention or ask basically is, well, you mentioned cymatics in some of your work. And of course, cymatics are, well, the shape of sound, basically. I'll put links. People can look up cymatics if they're not familiar. But one thing I'm noticing is, and it's something that you've mentioned, is we worry too much about what we put in our mouths and not enough about what comes out. And that's something I think is very relevant to these times, is where it's not uncommon these days to see sort of a rage or an anger rampage somebody's on. Just look on social media. It's there if one cares to, or listen in a parking lot. So people are not watching their words, you might say. They're not aware of what that does. I mean, you think about the biosphere that we have around our body, our own personal, you know, toroid around us, and the cymatic that ultimately we're imprinting within that by our emotions, it makes me realize that people are doing themselves incredible harm with all the vitriol these days. And it doesn't matter what side a person's on, if you're negative and you're blasting that out as if it's some kind of an energy cannon that hurts somebody, it's really not leaving your biosphere, your personal cymatic.
No, No, it's not. But I think it's really important to understand that people really under a lot of pressure, you know, people are under a lot of pressure. And when you're under pressure, you blow stress gaskets, you know, and you can't help it. So I mean, I think that these are kind of extraordinary times, and that to expect people to be like, oh, I better, you know, watch my words and be really mindful of what I'm creating, might be asking a lot. But that said, yeah, the power of our word is really massive, and what we speak, we create. And, you know, this is nothing new. I mean, Napoleon Hill, like, people have been saying this forever, as a man thinketh, but it's hard for that to sink in for whatever reason. I mean, I read Napoleon Hill when I was 18, but I didn't have the mental, emotional, energetic discipline to have that kind of mindfulness and presence. I think for a lot of people who are in pain and seeking, you can read stuff like that, but to actually really mindfully put it into practice all the time takes a lot of work and a lot of discipline. And it's really taken me decades of understanding more and more and more the power of the word. And even still, I will say things, you know, and afterwards I'm like, delete. Like, that's not the kind of energy I want to be creating. Yeah. I had a woman in a class come in one of my classes once, and we were going around and doing check-in, and she said, I have Hashimoto's disease. And I said to her, wait, right there. I'm like, who is Hashimoto? And why do you have his disease? Like, why are you saying that? What does that even mean? Right? Because what I'm seeing is that you have low voltage, poor boundaries, low self-worth, you're discharging more than you're recharging, you're giving more than you're receiving, and your voltage is dropped and your body's out of whack. You can call that whatever you want, right? But if you keep on saying, I have Hashimoto's disease, you're going to keep on creating that. You've got to re-language, you've got to re-story. So anybody out there, it's like, I have fibromyalgia or I have chronic fatigue, that's a mantra. That's an affirmation. Really? Is that something you want to affirm? I mean, does anybody want to sit around affirming I have chronic fatigue? No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody wants to affirm that, right? But that's the power of the word, that every single thought and every single word is a creative affirmation. And I used to sit around saying, I'm fat, I'm broke, I'm sick, I'm miserable, I'm struggling, I'm stuck. I mean, I've been there. Even when I knew better, I was saying all those things, and that was the experience that I was having. And it wasn't until I started becoming super more mindful about my words and how they made me feel, and I started to speak differently, that my life started to change. But at the same time, that was facilitated by receiving biofield tuning from my students, because so much of the emotions that we have buried drive our subconscious. Right. And so we don't even realize that, like, all of this junk is going on and affecting our thoughts. And now a lot of the uncomfortable thoughts we have are from emotions that we're just not letting ourselves feel. We're thinking our feelings instead of feeling our feelings. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work. That doesn't move them through. You know, they're waves. They rise up, they crest, they find expression ideally, and then they fall away. And if they rise up and then you stuff them back down again, they don't go away. And I'll tell you what, like, what I've seen in people who have chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and lupus and all these low voltage, they're all low voltage. They're all a consequence of disorder and low energy. And the solution is actually very simple. You have to start recharging more than you're discharging. You've got to start letting yourself receive, and you've got to be willing to let yourself be you. Because what I see, especially with the fibromyalgia, is that that's the pain of holding your authentic self back all the time. You know, what's too short for that? Like, be who you are. It might change your life. It might shake up the people around you, but stop pretending that you're something that you're not and hurting yourself in the process to please everybody else around you. Now, I see so many people do that. I was guilty. Not anymore.
Well, thinking our emotions rather than feeling our emotions and processing our emotions, that's very powerful, because it's very safe to think our emotions. I had never really thought about that before, but yeah, thinking about your emotions, yeah, that's great. Easy. Feeling them, whole different story, you know.
Yeah. Especially then, something like shame, right? Because shame is such an uncomfortable emotion. And so what I find is that people don't want to let themselves feel shame because it hurts too much. So shame in the biofield anatomy is kind of off the right hip. But just above it is self-righteousness. And so what people end up in, instead of feeling their own shame, is they point a finger, you know, that old point, when three are pointing back at you. Anytime anyone is engaging in any kind of self-righteous finger pointing, they are doing it as a strategy to avoid feeling their own shame.
Oh, I like that. It's very true. Well, that reminds me of, you've mentioned that you found a world pain spot within the human biosphere. And if you could talk about that for a second, because that reminds me of in Germany, there's a word called, oh gosh, I always screw it up. Welschmerz. It's called Welschmerz. The Welschmerz.
Yeah.
And they consider that basically the world pain. It sounds like you're talking about the same thing. And definitely at this time, a lot of people are, well, they're plugged into the collective pain body, as Eckhart Tolle would say. And then, as you know, the Germans would say, the Welschmerz, they're feeling that collective pain. And so you found the spot where it hangs out.
Yeah, in the left armpit, interestingly enough, like right over the left armpit is where, when we're feeling world pain. It was interesting how I discovered that. It was the week, this was giving me goosebumps, the week after Robin Williams committed suicide. Every single person that came in my table, I was getting jammed up in their left armpit. And I was like, what is going on here? Listen really deeply. And it was this like almost this pouring the heart out, you know, of like, oh, this is so painful. Like, you know, like, because so many of us, like, we grew up with Robin Williams, we loved him, he made us laugh. And the fact that this wonderful person that we loved so much, it gave us so much joy and pleasure, killed himself, is like really painful for people. And so that's where it showed up. And I see this in a lot of people, like there's rounded shoulders, there's a closed down throat chakra, and then this energy, just, you know, the bleeding heart liberal thing, just kind of like just bleeding energy out this left armpit. And, you know, I get that. I think it's really important that we feel and acknowledge world pain, but to sit in it is just pouring more bad vibes out into the world. Like, what is that accomplishing? Like, I think it's important that we have our moments where we, you know, I mean, I'm an emotional windsock. I see really sad things and I'm going to sit and cry for a moment. You know, I'm just going to be like, wait, that's really sad. But then I'm, you know, then I'm going to move on from that. And I'm going to allow myself to experience full spectrum of emotions that my day is going to evoke, and not overindulge world pain, because it's really easy to do. And it just sucks the life out of you. It pulls you down to the floor. It gives you nothing back, you know? So it's okay to be there and to move through that. You should, because it's a painful world at the moment. But it's also important, you know, levity is also important, and humor and lightness and playfulness. There's no reason why we can't foster and feed that, you know. And I know that, like, in this world where everything's so dark and heavy, it's almost like blasphemous to be like, hey, lighten up, you know, because there's some terrible things that people are going through. I mean, really, really, really terrible things. But some of the funniest people that I've ever met are people like EMTs and emergency room doctors, where, you know, they have to have a sense of humor in difficulty, because otherwise it would be too much to bear, right? So let yourself find, this is kind of like catching the updrafts, like a good funny joke in a difficult moment can make all the difference. It can break a tension. It can, you know, so it's so important that we don't lose our sense of humor through all of this, because it's such an important part of being human and healthy, right? Laughter is the best medicine, and follow close music.
Yeah. And it's important to keep that inner lightning bolt charged up. So we don't want to let it get too diminished, being down too much. If we need to experience it and process it, good, go for it, but get it done and get charged back up. And that it's a good thing. Because something I'm realizing is, at this time that we're in right now, I would say that the stronger your inner lightning bolt, basically, the stronger your intuition. And I think right now, I don't care about the politics of today or none of it. I really don't pay attention to the news any more than I have to. And I find that what's important right now is to have that strong lightning bolt, which then gives you a more pertinent and powerful, further reaching intuition. Because really, I think the next step for everybody, what they should be doing is what they should be doing. I think we're kind of entering the age of really powerful individuality. And if your intuition is fired up because your inner lightning bolt is, well, then you're always going to be a week, a month, a day ahead of the game. You're going to be fine. Does that make sense?
More than fine. Yeah, absolutely.
You're gonna thrive.
I mean, you think that the light in us, okay, the light of our electrical body is the light of source, right?
Yes.
I don't know what source is, but I do know that source makes light. Source makes sun, stars, right? Light. And is powering my electrical body and this electrical environment, okay? So the more light I have in my body, the more circuitry, the more I can download and hold this and make my inner battery meter go up, the more connected I'm going to be to source, because the more source I have in me, right? And that's mm-hmm. the one mind, one heart, one love. You know, that's health. Source, nature. I don't differentiate creation nor, you know, God, nature, the cosmos. It's all unified. It's all one electricity, basically. It's all one light. And so the more you transmute your pain body and you alchemize the heavy old stuff that you're carrying around, your baggage, those are all like little, you know, I'm thinking about how they burn cow dung, right? Mm-hmm. And it becomes fuel. So literally the shit from our past can become the fuel for our present when we alchemize it. And what that heavy darkness turns into light, it turns into the light of source. So we're brighter, we're more radiant, we're more resilient. You know, we have more of nature inside of us. And that is our nature, right? So people are walking around wearing these cloaks of stories and mental imbalances and grievances and ancestral wounds and cultural distortions. And everybody's sort of trapped inside a bubble of noise that's stopping them from having the clear, connected experience to the cosmos and experiencing their cosmic expanded self, right? And that's where bliss is. I mean, that's really where bliss is. And everybody has it at their potential. Like everybody has the quiet, ordered factory settings of a healthy human in them. And it's just a matter of getting all the noise and the other junk out. And then what you see emerge in everyone is this incredible, creative, beautiful, harmonious, gifted being that everybody is at their core. You know, we've just had a lot of bad programming.
Oh, definitely. A lot of dissonance. Yeah. Within our system. Dissonance. Well, okay. I will share a screen. Let's look at some of the new stuff you've got out there. Let's take me a second here. Share a screen. Share screen. Let's see. Let's do this one. Let me find the right screen. There it is. And it should show up, I think. There we are.
Oh, there we
go. So you've got some new products coming out, or that are out, and it's exciting. So this, like, I guess the Sonic Slider Tuning Fork, this one is kind of the workhorse of the system. This was the first one out, I think.
Well, no, actually it is. The first forks that I created were actually, the Schumann forks, which are the 62 and 64 hertz forks, and 62.64 and 54.81. They should be, I think they're on there individually. Yeah, they should be in there as a pair. I don't know why they're not. So those forks are based on the Schumann resonance. They're the seventh and eighth harmonic of the Schumann resonance. So 7.83 times 7 and 7.83 times 8. The sonic slider is 7.83 times 12. And the sonic slider is, you know, when people say, if I'm only going to get one fork, what should I get? You know, it's just a great tool for self-care. You know, I developed it for like personal rejuvenation stress relief, basically. So that's when you can rub it all over your body and you're basically informing your body with the electrical signal of the earth. So people love it and it definitely helps to reduce stress.
And that's the Schumann fork pair, or no?
Well, there's three forks that are based in the Schumann resonance. Okay. The seventh and eighth, which are the Schumann pair, but then the sonic slider is a separate fork. It's not part of a pair. It's a fork we sell individually, but it's also based on the Schumann resonance.
This guy. Yeah. And definitely the little circuit boot. I definitely like that because then you can like rub it on things, and that's really definitely, I would, you know, if somebody's getting the fork, I would definitely get the boot there because it's really helpful. And
it amplifies it. It's like an amplifier.
Yeah. And then another pair that's kind of interesting. So they have the Schumann pair, but also the Fibonacci pair that you've got. So Fibonacci pair 89 and then 144. And so,
yeah, so those are the 11th and 12th position in the Fibonacci sequence, 89 and 144. And what we found with these is that where the Schumann forks are based in the Earth's natural electric frequency, and help to bring that information to the body's electrical system. The Fibonacci pair create a binaural beat of phi, 1.618. If you divide 144 by 89, you get phi, the golden mean or the golden ratio. So our etheric bodies, the template that our bodies are built on, follow the golden mean very much. In fact, all of nature expresses itself in these ratios. And so these forks give the body sort of geometric information to create geometric order in the template. So between the two of them, you're taking care, you know, and these are two states of matter that our current medical science doesn't even acknowledge. The plasma body or the electrical body is not acknowledged. And the etheric body, the template, the blueprint, is also not acknowledged. And when we ignore these vital parts of ourselves, we miss the opportunity to engage in real healing. And so that's what biofield tuning and my whole approach with forks is, working in these additional states of matter that most people don't know, plasma and ether, and also with forces of nature that people don't really know about. Syntropy, right? Everybody knows about entropy, like, oh, everything's falling apart. Syntropy is the process of things coming together, is the creative force itself, right? And levity, everybody knows about gravity. Oh yeah, it pulls you down. Like gravity is pulling us down and entropy is ripping us apart. And that's how most people feel at the moment. But if you understand that levity also exists, syntropy and levity are a thing, and the forks help to engender both. Actually, sound waves fall upwards. So sound alone has levitational properties, right? There's good suspicion that ancient structures used acoustic levitation. There's certainly evidence that even in Tibet, they figured out ways to use horns and things to raise stones up for these monasteries up on top of mountains. Sound has levity and syntropy. So when we avail ourselves to these tools, it helps to put us back together and lift us up, lighten our step and lighten our load.
Absolutely. And yeah, so I can't find the Schumann pair, but it looks like this for people who are watching. So Fibonacci pair and then a Schumann pair. And you do give the description of each in on the website. And like the basic kind of getting started fork would just be the sonic slider tuning fork. Definitely, if you got the extra dough, get the circuit boot. I find that to be really wonderful. And then you've got some kits, tool kits, or accessories. It was all here until I looked. There we go. So if people want to go big, you have the light biofield tuning kit. And then of course you have the Cadillac, the biofield tuning kit. So, but a person, if you just want to get started, you really, one thing I like about the work that you've published all the decades of research you've been doing and Bliss, you know, pushing that boulder up the hill is, for one thing, you published it, you gave it to the world. That's very, very useful, but also it's approachable. People can actually do it. And so for somebody who wanted to get started, if they get your book, you know, I guess you have two, of course, out, but your latest one, Electric Body, Electric Health, if they get both books or even just the latest and read those and they get a fork, they can start to experiment on themselves, on their friends, and they can actually put it to the test. And I would say the first time you do it and you actually feel the fork react to something in the biosphere, it's going to freak you out. It's going to blow your mind. But it's a wonderful thing. And so really, if a person wanted to get started, what would you suggest? Because it's very approachable and people can test it. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's lots of different angles of approach here, you know, and it just kind of depends on what your individual needs are. So, So I would say if you're just testing the waters, the sonic slider is just a good place to start. And it comes with instructions on how to use it on your body. But I also like in the toolkit, it comes with, and on the site, there's different kinds of instructional videos. There's a sonic slider masterclass that I taught that was recorded that shows you a ton of stuff on how to use the sonic slider in addition to the free videos. You know, we actually have an online certification program. So if somebody, you know, is like, wow, I really want to add this to my toolbox. And I'll tell you what, like we have, unfortunately, we have very long waiting lists for our classes. Our classes are small. There are only 12 students. Everybody gets one-on-one attention. And, you know, we really want to make sure people are well-trained. So it's two levels, like you just showed there, foundations and practitioner training.
Where'd it go? Here we go. Yeah. Foundation class, practitioner training, advanced training module.
Yeah. So we have all of that, you know, if you want to become a practitioner. But I think if you're a reader, the book is a good place to start. Either one.
Yeah. Just the nice thing is you can get started. You can go to biofieldtuning.com and you can get a fork and a book and you can get started. And that's a beautiful thing because I am new to it. You know, I'm just getting started, I guess you could say. But the thing is, once you become familiar and the fork hits something in the biosphere in the biofield, you're going to know it. And it's remarkable. And as you mentioned, the intuition, the male slot, you start feeling like I get what this is. And something, it's on the site here somewhere, but definitely something I would suggest is you do have a larger printout of the actual biosphere map, which is really helpful.
Map is there. Yeah, so we've got little plastic cards, you know, handy reference cards you can keep in your bag. Or we also have full size wall maps of the biofield anatomy map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sure like for you and for people who've been doing it for a couple of years, it's probably just in here and you don't have to even think about it. But when you're new to it, definitely having a nice poster on the wall or a card is very helpful. You know, it definitely helps to confirm some of the intuition and feelings that you're getting rolling in. Well, that's the stuff that I wanted to go over. I mean, I really appreciate your time and, you know, being on, and I like getting this, work out there because I'm doing it and I think it's important. So, I mean, thanks for all your work and following your bliss and making this happen and getting it out there and being on the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Craig. I appreciate it. I'm glad that you're getting into it. And, you know, it's like, it's a wonderful world of discovery. Like I've been doing it for 25 years and I never get tired or bored. You know, every time I go to work on somebody, it's a little adventure. I just taught a class actually, and it's not available on the website now, but it will be. It's a 5-week class called Tune Yourself into Health. And I taught people how to work on themselves, how to work on their own biofield with what we call a hologram, projecting a hologram, where you basically just imagine that you're on a table and come in and work on your own biofield. And it's very possible to do that. And it was so fun with these people, you know, having the experience of like, I don't feel anything. And then they're like, oh, I feel something. Oh, I understand what I'm encountering. Oh, I'm feeling better. I'm getting unstuck, you know? So that is also an option. Probably by the time this airs, it'll be up on the store too. So, that might be a really good way for people to learn about it as well, that class.
Mm. And also doing your sessions, you do have on the store. Actually, I was going to mention the Kali Yuga about having as our energy, as we change yugas, if one believes in that, if we are going into the a new yuga, which is going from iron to kind of copper, we're getting a higher energy. They say like you're here in the present, we're going into the Dwapara Yuga. We're getting a lot more cosmic energy than like the whole grand solar minimum cycles and such like that. We're getting a lot more energy from the sun. So to have your inner lightning bolt tuned is a much better way, a much more positive way to handle these new, well, energetic cycles that we're rolling through. You know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I totally agree with that. I mean, that's a model that I ascribe to. And I almost feel like biofield tuning kind of evolved in this time period to help clear the karma accumulated during the Kali Yuga. Because in order for us to traverse back into, you know, basically closer to the great central sun, where there is more light, where there is more illumination, you know, there was a lot of blindness in the Kali Yuga, a lot of misunderstandings, and a lot of karma accumulates because of that. And I really do feel like so many of the people who come to Biofield Tuning, whether as students or as clients, are feeling like it's their job to clean up their ancestral lineage. And I really think that's true, that we need to digest these experiences in order for us to be light enough, you know, or it's just a natural process of clearing that's taking place. We're just servants of something that wants and needs to happen anyway, so that we can move into the lighter ages.
Definitely. We all have our ancestral healing to do, and it's a great place to get to, just to be okay with that and realize, just like you have your own personal childhood trauma, that very well may go back a long, long ways. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to heal that. And then you realize that kind of through the multiverse, you are healing all these people that, well, they're feeling it. It's happening.
Yeah, it's really true. It's really true. It's all one field.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I'll send you a link. It'll be up. Well, it's up right now. So I'll send you a link when it's all done. And thank you so much again.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you, Craig. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Be well.